This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
In 1953, British novelist Graham Greene wrote the book The Quiet American, a perceptive analysis of the transition from the withdrawing and defeated French imperial venture in Vietnam to the just beginning U.S. imperial venture on the same quagmire. As the U.S. pursued its murderous policies, a semi-fictionalized novel was published titled The Ugly American. And in that novel, an Asian journalist says, "For some reasons, the American people I meet in my country are not the same as the ones I knew in the United States. A mysterious change seems to come over Americans when they go to a foreign land. They isolate themselves socially. They live pretentiously. They're loud and ostentatious." And by 1963, that book had become a movie starring Marlon Brando. Well, this month, Eve Engler published his latest book, not The Quiet American, not The Ugly American, but The Ugly Canadian is its title. It's an analysis of Stephen Harper's foreign policy. Well, to discuss Harper's militarist and imperial agenda, we reached Eve Engler in Ontario, where he's in the midst of a cross-Canada book tour. Greetings, Eve, and welcome again to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Did you have The Ugly American in mind when you chose the title for your book?
Not exactly. I haven't actually read the novel, but I had the sort of idea that that the term "Ugly American" has come to represent, which is of an aggressive, militaristic foreign policy that, particularly in Latin America, refers to, I guess, basically American imperialism. And I think that there's a lot of, unfortunately, there's increasing similarities between that type of policy and what the Harper government is pursuing.
You say the goal of your book is to spark a much greater interest in Canadian foreign policy among Canadians. When you consider how much Canada is involved economically and militarily in other countries' affairs, why do you think there is such minimal interest in Harper's foreign affairs policies and actions?
I think that most Canadians have almost no sense of how destructive Canadian foreign policy is for millions and millions of people around the world. I almost in the vast majority of Canadians don't understand that there are Canadian mining companies that are involved in incredibly destructive social conflicts, causing incredible ecological decay in communities all around the world, and that the Canadian state, the Canadian government, is backing those companies up wholeheartedly. Most Canadians don't understand, you know, the consequences of Canada's role in the bombing of Libya. The dominant media in this country does a very poor job of describing what Canada's doing abroad, and two, what the consequences, the human consequence, is for the population, particularly poorer people. And so the hope for the book, alongside the book, we've printed 300,000 Stop Harper's Crimes stickers. The hope is to try to spur greater interest and mobilization around challenging Harper's the many facets of Harper's foreign policy.
I'd just like your thought on one aspect about the question of minimal difference. You mentioned the lack of awareness and so on, which your book addresses and really provides excellent information and a map of what is really happening. But I'm wondering how much you think the importance of lack of awareness is because the political parties outside of the Conservatives, the Liberals and the NDP don't seem to have great differences when it comes to foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the Conservatives' comments yesterday about the Richard Falk's the UN rapporteur for the human rights in the occupied territories, his call for a boycott of prominent companies that are complicit in the settlements, both conservative two conservative ministers condemned Falk, called on him to resign. If you look at the CBC website in terms of the comments, and there's hundreds and hundreds of comments, and then there's people can vote in support or against comments, and the pro-Palestinian comments are like 5-1 in support of, you know, opposed to what the Conservative government did. So in that instance, I think there's actually a fair bit of sort of there's a growing knowledge of what's going on, and there's sort of passive support for the Palestinians. So it's not just a matter of, you know, making people aware. I think there's still an issue of making people more aware and fully understanding the issues. But I think that part of it is turning sort of passive support into one more informed positions. And most importantly, then action and to consolidate the power of the different solidarity movements of those challenging Canadian foreign policy, and that's, you know, the opposition parties sometimes can aid in that process if they're willing to take on the issues, but the reality is that the history of the opposition, particularly the NDP, going back even to the CCF, is that on foreign policy issues, they go along with the establishment unless there is mobilized, active citizenry activists on these different issues. So, you know, their principles tend to come out when there are, you know, thousands of people opposing Canada's role in the invasion of Iraq. They're much less principled if there isn't that the action. So it's not just simply an information battle. Obviously, it's, you know, information battle is part of it, but it's also about consolidating that knowledge into political action and to organizations that will push these issues and including pushing the opposition parties to actually take this issue seriously.
You mentioned earlier the question of mining and the need for Canadians to know much more about the devastating effects of Canadian foreign policy in that area. And usually we don't think of that as somehow an area of foreign policy. We think that's simply private corporate activity. So I'm wondering if you could give us, let's say, in the case of mining, some example of how the Canadian government involvement in that is so important.
Yeah, well, in the book, I quote some Latin American officials who say that basically what they see the Canadian ambassador as in their country is just a representative of the mining companies, and that's been really growing. Where Canadian ambassadors in Ecuador, most of what they do is try to advance the interests of Canadian mining companies. So there's a very close tie at this sort of diplomatic level, but the ties are growing, sort of across the board, where you have the Canadian International Development Agency spending tens and tens of millions of dollars to bring NGOs together with mining companies, NGOs like Plan Canada and World Vision, to work with the Barrick Gold and IAM Gold, and CETA putting millions of dollars into projects run by these NGOs that are basically designed to pacify opposition to the mines in the local communities in Peru and in Burkina Faso, elsewhere in the world. So you have instances where the Canadian government, in the case of Mongolia, they established Canadian diplomatic relations, opened up the Trade Commission, then an embassy entirely to serve Canadian mining interests, particularly Ivanhoe, which was uh, was being heavily contested by Mongolians, where thousands of people had been demonstrating against the multi-billion-dollar Ivanhoe mine. So there's just so many different ways in which the diplomatic apparatus, the aid agencies, in some instances, I think one of the things lurking in the background of the war in Afghanistan is in fact the fact there's lots of mineral potential in Afghanistan that different Western companies want to get in on. So in so many different ways, the Canadian state is advancing the interests of Canadian mining corporations all around the world, and in the context, of course, where Canadian mines are responsible for so many different socially destructive projects and are far and away, Canada's far and away the leading source of world mines.
You mentioned reference to Canada's military involvement in Afghanistan and the possible economic links of that. You have a marvelous chapter called Becoming a Warrior Nation, where you write about the militarization of our own culture and an economy. I'm wondering if you could give us some examples of how you see that.
Yeah, the conservatives are closely tied with the corporations behind Canadian militarism that make those Canadian companies that are involved in billions of dollars of contracts for the F-35. The Harper government is basically trying to reestablish or to really spur the whole shipping sector in this country to its $35 billion add on to the Navy. So there's major corporations that are beneficiaries from the increased spending on the military, which the conservatives have been pursuing. But there's also a sort of culture battle going on here, going on with most Canadians, where they're spending, according to the military, said they spent in 2010, 2011, they spent $353 million promoting the military, devoted 661 full-time staff members to promoting the military. In other words, to convincing Canadians to support war, to support the future Canadian military endeavors. There's a whole slew of different examples I cite in the book of deepening the ties with the of militaristic ties, the one being the changing the citizenship handbook guide in 2011 to include over a dozen different references to militarism to basically indoctrinate new Canadians into this more militaristic kind of ethos. So there's that battle going on, and that battle is really tied into, one, it's tied into the war in Afghanistan, it's tied into having Canadians support the bombing of Libya, but it's also tied into the longer-term plan, and that has the Harper government establishing 7 permanent military bases in countries around the world. There are already a few of them already been signed with Jamaica, UAE, Germany, plans with South Korea, Tanzania, Senegal, and to basically have permanent Canadian military bases all around the world to be prepared for future expeditionary missions. So at all different levels, they're basically preparing for endless, ongoing future Canadian wars.
There's a great deal in your book that's very clearly explained, well documented. I just choose to end maybe a brief comment that you might have on Canadian foreign policy under Harper approach to China, because that's been much in the news recently. So what sort of framework do you think we should have for when we're thinking about that dimension?
To be honest, I've been a little bit uncomfortable, not a little bit, I've been uncomfortable with a lot of the people on the left criticizing the Foreign Investment Protection Agreement with China. I oppose foreign investment protection agreements that Canada signs with all countries. I think that what they do is they expand the power of investors at the expense of the environment, at the expense of indigenous communities, of the working class in different countries. And it's too bad that much of the opposition to the FIPA, that's very, very much legitimate, has not been done in a more kind of internationalist way, and has sort of played off this Red China sort of almost kind of racist type rhetoric. So you know, similarly with regards to investment in the tar sands, Chinese companies, you know, spending $15 billion to invest in the tar sands. You know, I think that one, the tar sands should be shut down. But two, you know, natural resources in Canada, as in the Congo, as in Ecuador, should be owned and operated by local communities, by you know, provincial governments, national states. And so you know, I oppose Chinese investments into the tar sands. But I think we need to be much more, you know, universal about that criticism. And unfortunately, a lot of the comment has gone into a different direction, a less internationalist kind of direction, which is a little bit unfortunate.
Well, I certainly recommend the book to listeners. Thank you very much for taking time today, Eva. I know you're on your book tour and very busy, and I'll give people information about when you're going to be in Vancouver. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Our guest has been Eve Engler. He's author of The Ugly Canadian, Stephen Harper's Foreign Policy. And Eve will be speaking in Vancouver on Wednesday, November 7th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be at the Central Vancouver Public Library. That's 350 West Georgia Street in the Alice McKay Room. And entrance is free.